Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 12, Chapter 10, Text 34. Varamekam vrane tapi Purnat kama bivarshanat Bhagavatya chutam bhaktim Tatpareshu tatatvayi. Benediction. Ekam. One. Rene. I request. Ata api. Nevertheless. Purnat. From him who is completely full. Kama abhivarshanat, who showers down the fulfillment of desires. Bhagavati, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Achyutam, infallible. Bhaktim, devotional service. Tatpareshu, for those who are dedicated to him. Tata, and also Tvayi, for yourself. This is a verse spoken by Markandeya Rishi to Lord Shiva and Uma, who have come to offer him a benediction, and this is his request. But I do request one benediction from you, who are full of all perfection and able to shower down the fulfillment of all desires. I ask to have unfailing devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for his dedicated devotees, especially you. So we'll come back to the verse. That's where we're going to end up. The topic for this morning, to help us specifically tomorrow in our 32-round day and thereafter, improve the quality of our chanting. Those of you that have attended japa retreats know that we have at the beginning a Sankalpa ceremony, correct? Vocabulary word. Sankalpa. You know the meaning? No? Sankalpa means intention. Intention. A traditional use in the ritualistic portion of the Vedas with Sankalpa is, along with the performance of the ritual, there's an explicit statement of what it is that you want. Maybe it's good health, maybe it's wealth, maybe it's overcoming an obstacle, maybe it's something. But it's the intention of the ritual, the Karmakanda ritual. So this isn't Karmakanda practice, this is Krishna consciousness. So we modify or we clarify the sankalpa, the intention. Some years ago, please don't sit in the aisle because people will come to take darshan of the deity. Move forward a little bit, please. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Oh, it feels much better that you're closer anyways. Thank you. Much, much nicer. Much nicer. So I'll try in words to describe a picture. So here's the picture. Facing you is the backside of a person who is sitting in a yoga position. And he's looking over on this side, and there's a big, like a mountain that's birth. It shows inside the mountain is a living entity within the womb, still forming. And then in the middle is this big space, and over here is another big mountain that inside the mountain is bones, skeleton bones, indicating by artist's depiction, there's birth and there's death and there's that which goes in between birth and death. And the person is looking at that, and you know, the artistic depiction is what goes in that space between birth and death, or what's life, or like Brahma asked at the beginning, his inquisitiveness, who am I? What is it that I'm to do between this and this? Purpose of life. So largely conditioned souls, especially in this middle planetary region, it's fruit of activities. That's what we're supposed to do. Passion. Enjoy objects of the senses. And for that you need prosperity, so you do, you may do dharma to get some artha, to get some kama, and pretty much stops there. Generally, it doesn't even go to the dharma stage, it's just fruitive activity to get economic development. Fruitive activity to get economic development, and then enjoyment. But some have it little more refined, and it's you do dharma, you do religious activity to gain piety so that you can then prosper and then enjoy. That's what goes in there. And then we've come from that world, and now we're practicing devotional service. And what's the intention of devotional service? Well, it's still enjoy. But, you know, somewhere in there, there's this idea of be spiritual. You know, it's more or less clear, but be spiritual, be Krishna conscious. And, you know, we can say what being Krishna conscious is, kind of. At least we can, you know, articulate it because we've read it so many times. But our means to achieve that is the holy name. The awakening of love of God. In the highest stages, for followers of Lord Chaitanya, that love of God found within the resident of Vrindavan for Krishna. And at least, you know, in the preliminary stages, you know, where most of us are, is purifying ourselves, becoming free from the material contamination. Chaito darpanam arjanam, cleansing the material desires from our heart. I'm going to read something again because it's powerful. From Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami, text 8, where this is now Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on text 8. Just two short sentences. Prabhupada quotes his spiritual master commenting on this text 8. One who has not yet developed interest in Krishna consciousness should give up all material motives, like, and train his mind, whew, by following the progressive regulative principles, namely chanting and remembering Krishna, and his name, form, qualities, pastimes, and so forth. In this way, develop a taste for such things. And then again, he writes, Bhaktisiddhanta, this is continuing his commentary on this verse. The Chaitanya Charitamrita advises those who are neophytes, that's us, to give up all kinds of motivated desires and simply engage in the regulative devotional service of the Lord according to the directions of scriptures. In this way, a devotee can gradually develop attachment for Krishna's name, fame, form, qualities, and so forth. So that's like you're nowhere, and then all of a sudden you give up all material motives. And this is sankalpa. Well, maybe a realistic statement for us might be, as an intention while chanting, and improving the intention while chanting, just to keep it really simple, may my heart become cleansed. Cheto darpana marjanam, that the mirror of the mind, that the place where there's the reflection of reality, that's the mind, the material mind, and filtering even the reflection, or distorting the reflection, is my desires. So let my desires become cleansed. And gradually, as that cleansing takes place, then the focus can become clearer and clearer and clearer. But at the beginning, it may not be so clear. But we all have to operate from someplace. You know, so the reality is, wherever we are, we operate from there. There's a nice verse, one that many of you know, from Second Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, where Shukadeva Goswami is advocating Tivra Bhakti. Tivra means powerful, like strong. Strong devotion. And the recommendation for strong devotion is given to three different categories of people. Those with lots of material desires, sarvakama, all big, big piles of material desires. Desire for liberation. I want freedom from these material desires. I want out of here. Liberation. Desire. And then those that don't have either of those. Desire less. And so, we spoke yesterday about the Buddhist conception of desirelessness, where in effect you become a stone. You don't feel anything. You don't desire anything. You practically don't even exist. It's nothingness. That's their desire. That's their concept of desirelessness, nirvana. Void. What's existent in a void? Nothing. And enter nirvana is entering into nothingness. Whew. So here's Jiva Goswami's description of what desirelessness is. I'll say it a few times because it's nice. Bhajaniya parama purusha sukha matra sa sukhatvam. That's the phrase. So bhajan, we know what that means. Like, you know, Badahari leads us in bhajans. It's glorification. Kind of like we make a little distinction, an ISKCON distinction, bhajan and kirtan. Kirtan is Hare Krishna. It's kind of, we do like this. And bhajan is songs. We make that distinction. More, according to the meaning of bhajan, it's Bhaj, the root word, is devotional service, expressions of devotion. Singing or expressing, vibrating expressions of devotion. Chanting. Bhajaniya, unto whom? Paramapurusha, the personality of Godhead. Glorification of the personality of Godhead. Sukha matra. Sukha is happiness. And matra is the object. Like matra sparsha stukantaya sitoshna sukha dukada. Matra is the object. So if, when the object of one's own happiness is the happiness of the personality of Godhead, sva sukhatvam, that's my happiness. One's own happiness is the happiness of the personality of Godhead coming from the glorification of Him. I mean, Krishna doesn't need anything. He doesn't need our glorification. He's perfectly content. He's Atmaram. He's fully self-satisfied. But when he sees the living entity reinstated once again in their constitutional position instead of in their doggish mentality and hellish mentality and deviant mentality and gone in the wrong direction, and he sees them once again engaged in that activity, that's his happiness. And desirelessness is to make that one's happiness. Krishna's happiness is one's happiness. It's called love. The happiness of the beloved is the happiness of the lover. The happiness of the object, that's this matra, the object. The happiness of the object, that's Krishna, of love, is the happiness of the abode of love. There's the terms in Rupa Goswami's language. Ashraya is the abode or the shelter of love, and Vishaya is the enjoyer of love. Those terms can mean different things according to how they're utilized, but that's one way of utilizing the abode of love and the object of love. And Krishna is the object of love. And when his happiness is one's happiness, that's desirelessness. One can achieve the message of that verse from the second canto is whether one is in the sarvakama, big time material desires, or liberation desire. One can come to the position of desirelessness through tivra bhakti. So that could be a sankalpa. Let me come to that stage of desirelessness. Or let me engage myself in tivra bhakti. Let me chant with great enthusiasm. Even my mind is thinking something else. Like the little exercise we did yesterday. We're different than the mind. As we're different than all those other things. Different than our breath. Different than our cloth. Different than our mind. Who we are. Let our desire be. And so connect with the self. With our, you know, our inner, real, true being. Desiring intent. This is now sankalpa. The intention to connect with the personality of Godhead. And do that with great determination, tivra bhakti. So let's now just quickly go to, because the topic is intention and elevating our intention or being moved by that power of intention while chanting. That's the topic. So, what's an example from scripture of sarvakama or sakam bhakti coming to the position of desirelessness, nishkam bhakti, dhruva. Okay, for those of you that may not know the story of Dhruva, little boy, son of a king, he had a stepbrother, because the king had two wives, and Dhruva was the elder of the two boys, little boys, and his younger brother was Anupam. But the king had a partiality towards the second wife, and therefore he was especially affectionate to the younger brother of Dhruva. When the younger brother of Dhruva was seated on the king's lap, Dhruva wanted, little boy, wanted to climb on his father's lap. And his stepmother said, get down. And said some other mean things. Like, you'll never sit on the lap of your father. You'll never sit on the throne of your father. Because the elder son becomes the king. You'll never sit on the throne of your father. Except for one possibility. You can die. And then take your birth again in my womb, and then maybe. She was really nasty. I call her. Her name was Suruchi. And I call her Su Nasty. Very nasty. So Dhruva turned to his father, and with his eyes, he was pleading for his father's protection. His father said nothing, because he was attached to the wife, to Sunasti. So he didn't say anything, because he might, she may become unhappy with me. So he said nothing. Dhruva, little boy, just burst out in tears and went running. From the royal throne and went to find his mother, Suniti. And in the course of the conversation with Suniti, he was in this chivalrous, kshatriya, spirited, fiery. After he explained to his mother what happened, I want a better kingdom than my father. I want a better kingdom than my father's father. I want a better kingdom than my father's father's father. Called Sakama, material desire. I want a kingdom, big one. And his mother very innocently said, well, if you want a kingdom, I don't, what can I do? I'm just a woman, and I don't know how to get you that kingdom, but if you get the favor of Lord Vishnu, I have full faith. He can do anything. Dhruva thought about it and said, okay, how do I find Vishnu? I don't know. I've heard sages, they go to the forest and somehow they find Vishnu. I'm leaving right now for the forest to find Vishnu. Zoom, off he went, little boy. Didn't even take a bag of samosas with him. He just left. He didn't find Vishnu. He found lots of trees and birds and animals and insects, but no Vishnu. So Narada came to pacify the boy, told him to go back home, and many ways tested his determination. He saw he was completely determined. Sakam bhakti. So he gave him the means to achieve Vishnu, and he achieved Vishnu because he performed Tivra Bhakti. So how did it happen? How did it go from Sakam? How can we go from our position of having material desires? Maybe a few, maybe a lot, maybe some really big ones, but some. To Nishkam Bhakti, to desireless state. And we're going to hear later, during the 11 o'clock class, a nice explanation of this from the Vishnu Dutas, but in short, just the little phrase that they speak, basically they say, Lord Vishnu sent us. The Vishnu Dutas say that to the Yamadutas. Lord Vishnu sent us. Why? Because he heard Ajamila calling, Narayana. And then he thought, oh, I'm obliged. Narayana's attention went to the one who was calling Narayana's name. We'll hear some more about this later. But that's how Tivra Bhakti works. Even if it's done for whatever, material motivation. That's not recommended, by the way. But even if that is the condition, we're advised, as we heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, set aside all material motives. Become nishkam. Easier said than done, right? So, at least from our position, we can cultivate. But one of the ways for sure it's advised for all is Tivra Bhakti, very strong, determined devotional service. Chant with great enthusiasm and with the intention, it's recommended, with the intention of becoming free from material desires or becoming attached to the personality of Godhead, exclusively attached to the personality of Godhead. That's a sakam, becoming nishkam. Now, this is a little more subtle, so you have to pay attention. But paying attention is good. The Atri and Anasuya, those of you who are from India, you know who Atri and Anasuya are. Atri was a great mystic. He was a powerful meditator, but he was also a great devotee. And like those who were in his category, they were expected, they were given the service of creating good population to fill up the universe that Lord Brahma created. He created the universe and then they were to fill it up. So Atri and Anasuya were married and they began their populating the planet program by undergoing austerities. But when doing so, their intention, their sankalpa, was to have as their son the Lord. But they weren't specific. It was the Lord. So what happened was, all three personalities, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma, all appeared before them. Because their intention wasn't clear. It was the Lord. And they're all lords. They're lords of the modes of nature. They're guna avatars, and then they appeared, all three of them. And they smiled, and then they spoke. I don't know if it was a trio, or they all spoke simultaneously, but here's what they said. Dear Brahmana, you are perfect in your determination. Sankalpa is the Sanskrit word. And therefore, as you have decided, so it will happen. It will not happen otherwise. We are all the same person upon whom you were meditating, and therefore we have all come to you. And the arrangement was made that by them, since you've not been specific, we will all three appear as your son. So they're partial incarnations of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. And their names were Dattatreya, Soma, and Durvasa Muni, our very enigmatic personality, Durvasa Muni, was the son of Atri and Anasuya, very famous personality in the Puranic lore. So in that section, Prabhupada explains something that's very important. That's why I referred to it. One's determination is fulfilled according to the strength of one's devotion. So we have now, with this little discussion, two things. Be specific. And power that specific with devotion. A little sharing, it's like over here, but it's nice. So Bhurijan Prabhu spent, I don't know, a number of years, 10 years or something like that, preparing a book because he was involved in education in Vrindavan, like, you know, the Gurukul, and then later adult education, Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. So his absorption, brahminical absorption, was in education. So he wrote a book. And it's like that thick. And it's called The Art of Teaching. And I was teaching in Vrindavan at the VIHE 1 year, so I took his course. I did it for several years. So I took his course. And I love Bhurijan, he's wonderful. What he did for 1 month is he taught one thing. Every class. And it's still with me. Because we're thick. And because he repeated it from this angle, that angle, many different angles. It went in. And here's the instruction. Every day was the same thing. Most effective approach to education is to have an explicit educational objective. And that's it. That's what we learned. Explicit educational objective. Like, if you want, so, what's our explicit educational objective for this class? It's make your intention very clear and powered with devotion. The more you do that, from this purport that I just read, one's determination is fulfilled according to the strength of one's devotion. So, intention, we have like a, you know, so this is in place of a sankalpa ceremony where you can just do something formally, write something down, and you did your sankalpa. Next, like how we normally do things, in one ear and out the other ear. Next. I got an A in that exam. What's next? Nothing sticks. So let it stick. That your intention is going to take you somewhere. If you don't have a clear intention, good luck. I mean, so here's another way of saying it, a nicer way of saying it. Prabhupada explained, I heard it so many times, when the goal is very clearly defined, then it becomes very easy to make steps to get there. Very simple. Conversely, if you don't have a clear sense of goal, good luck. I hope you get there. So here's life, back to this image. Here's birth, here's death, and in between is life. What goes in that space? If you don't have a clear idea, the modes of nature are going to rule. And the prevalent one around these days, or in this region of the universe, is passion. Fruit of activity. Enjoying the fruits of those fruit of activities and becoming a sense enjoyer. It's really popular. Different varieties of it. So many flavors. Not just 37 different flavors. There's unlimited varieties of that one. That's what's going to rule your life. And then you also think, so let the question be asked and the answer arise, awaken within your heart. And you may need, as you go along in your devotional life, adjust it, refine it, make it even more focused, more clear. Likely that's going to happen. But have a clear intention when you chant and power it with devotion. So hopefully you'll do that. That's the explicit educational objective. So with Atri and Anasuya, their objective, they were powered by devotion, but their objective wasn't so clear. So they had three sons, not the personality of Godhead. From Bhagavad Gita, just going to read one verse. Chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, text 16. O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me with different intentions, right? Distressed, desire of wealth, inquisitive, he was searching for knowledge of the absolute truth. Different intentions, all engage in devotional service. In the purport, one sentence, Prabhupada writes, pure devotional service is without aspiration and without desire for material profit. Same thing as Bhaktisiddhanta was saying. So we're not there. We're beginning devotional service and we have this, that, and the other thing and a mix of them. But Rupa Goswami's teaching is to aspire for unmotivated devotional service without karma or gyan. Cultivate it. We're not there. Cultivate it. That's the intention. Cultivate it. And how to? Tivra Bhakti. And associate with persons who have achieved that or are well on their path to having achieved that. And when you associate with them, how do you associate? The scriptures are filled with how you associate, but here we are. We're hearing from one another and serving one another and assisting one another. That's how we associate. Now we'll go to the upper end where there's no material desire. We're going to hear some more about this personality, but Sudama, the friend of Krishna. So we'll go some more at the 11 o'clock class about Sudama. They had no material desire. Not only had no material desire, he didn't have anything. But he wasn't in any anxiety about not having anything because he had no material desire. When he got back to his home, his wife, we'll hear the whole story. He went to see Krishna. He didn't ask Krishna for anything. And he came back and he saw, instead of his home, he saw a palace. And he saw his wife decorated all fabulously. And then he expressed his heart to Krishna, who is so kind. He requested three things. Again, we'll hear this. But this is the desire of one who's desireless. Bhajaniya, Paramapurusha, Sukha Matra, Svasukhatvam. Desireless. He expresses three things. The opportunity to serve you, Krishna, in unalloyed devotion. Second is similarly to serve those who are similarly situated. And to hear from those persons of their expressions of devotion and their glorifications of you, because it will help support that mood of devotion. And a third thing that he speaks of is Maitri. Maitri means sympathy. Now, how is Sudama thinking, let me have sympathy for Krishna? Sounds strange, because if commonly we use the word sympathy, like, you know, someone has something and there's somebody that doesn't have something, sympathy is, let me give something to the one who has nothing. You know, a less fortunate person, sympathy for a less fortunate person. So obviously, that's not the meaning. I'm more fortunate than Krishna. That's not Sudama's thinking like that. But he's thinking rather, whatever it is that is Krishna's desire, let that be my desire. Like when we're having kirtan. Like a little heads up. We're going to be having kirtan again. A bunch more. And the musicians should be in sympathy with the leader. The leader sets the mood, and the instruments follow the mood, and then the chorus of singers follow the mood. But supposing somebody wants to play fast, and somebody wants to play slow, and somebody wants to sing another melody. It's not the same. So, I'm sure you have experienced kirtans where, you know, sometimes the mridanga players, like kids are like this, they want to go fast, because they learn how to play fast, and they want to play fast. And the singer doesn't want to go fast. And there's this, you know, dissonance between... Anyway, you get the idea. Sudama is desireless. He just wants whatever Krishna wants. We'll hear some more about this as we go on later. There are others who have similar desires as Maharaj, as Sudama did. Maharaj Prikshit, he simply desired unalloyed devotion to the personality of God. After having heard from, because of his dearness to Krishna, he had that quality. Even in the first canto, it's described like that. What to speak of the 12th canto, which we're going to speak about in a moment. Fixed in the personality of Godhead's desire. When he was cursed, that's like, yikes, you know, I'm going to die. And yikes. And he accepted, this is the Lord's mercy. Two things. He's very kind. He's going to detach me from my attachments, my worldly attachments. He's so kind. And he wants to take me to him, and I can't go to him unless I become detached from my attachments. So he's taking me to him. And the medium of that is detaching me from my attachments. He's so kind. That's Maharaj Prikshit. That's the position of a desireless person. We'll say the converse. As long as there's desire, we're going to have issues with, you know, more obviously, some of the things that are happening in our life, and ultimately it's issues with Krishna. That's what keeps us in the material world, by the way. I mean, the obvious is having desires separate from Krishna, but what's behind that is we have an issue with Krishna. That's what keeps us in this world, by the way. And we'll speak some more. That's false ego. An interest separate from Krishna's interest is false, but keeps us here. False ego. Again, we'll discuss this in the 11 o'clock class. So I wanted to speak another personality who is a very wonderful depicted person within the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi was the son of Rakadu. Rakadu was in the line of Bhrigu. Bhrigu was one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma. So he's... When Markandeya Rishi was planning to conceive a child, he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. So he underwent great austerities to please Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva came before him and offered him the following benediction choice. And the choice was, you could have a son who lives for only 16 years, but he'll be very pious. Or you can have a son that will live for a very long time, and he'll be impious. So he selected the first one. And Markandeya was born. And he was beautiful, and he was wonderful, and he was all good qualities. And when his 16th birthday came up, Markandeya was in great distress. But the young boy was such a devotee that at his 16th birthday, Yamaraj came, and Lord Shiva personally came and destroyed Yamaraj. Of course, he reappeared again in some other form. But Lord Shiva gave the benediction, he'll live only 16 years. The boy was so wonderful, Lord Shiva protected him in that way. And he was exclusively devoted. He was a nishkam bhakta, tivra bhakta of Lord Vishnu. And the intensity and the quality and the capacity of his devotion to Lord Vishnu was astonishing to everyone, even Lord Brahma, even Bhrigu Muni and his father, Rakandu, were astonished. It's described... different Puranas have different versions of his story, but for 2 billion years, he was engaged in exclusive devotion to the Personality of Godhead. So the rendering that's found in the Bhagavatam is, Lord Indra started to get nervous. He thought, uh-oh, he may want to take over my kingdom. Maybe he has this sankalpa. He's doing all these things, we can get my kingdom. You know how that one goes. So what did he do? He sent from the heavenly planets, Cupid personified, along with the choicest dancing girls. And they came and had a concert right in front of Markandeya Rishi's meditation spot. Woo 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 woo. Cupid firing his arrows, and he just smiled. And you know, dance better and wiggle better and more arrows, and nothing happened. He just smiled. It's described in the Bhagavatam that Indra became melted with his spiritual, the force of his spiritual power. And he became very ashamed. So he called back Cupid and the dancing girls. And the Personality of Godhead, being so pleased with his exclusive devotion, Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, came before Markandeya Rishi and offered him a benediction. So what's your sankalpa? And his statement, his reply was, just seeing you is the perfection of my life. I don't desire anything. I don't need anything. I'm completely satisfied. But I'm curious. I'd like, if you so deem it nice, I'd like to see your illusory potency. Narayana smiled. And the waters of devastation began to rise, flooding in all directions. Oh, when he was protected by Lord Shiva, this is important, he was given a benediction. When Yamaraj came, he was given a benediction that he would live for several days of Brahma. And that sounded nice, except for during the night of Brahma, what happens? There's devastation. So there's different versions. He experienced the devastation. But it's the illusory potency only. So the waters of devastation rose. Everything was engulfed in water, except for him, because he has his benediction to live. And he's, you know, not only, you know, the waves of the ocean, but the waters of devastation, the waves are huge and large aquatics and you know, torrential winds, and he was exhausted. You know, didn't say he ate anything either. He just or drank anything either. He's just in this water of devastation for 4,320,000,000 years. Even if you're a good swimmer, like how long can you swim? And then he saw in the distance a small island, and on the island was a banyan tree, and beneath the banyan tree was a little blue boy, Krishna, baby, lying on his back, smiling at Markandeya Rishi. And he pulled his left foot to his mouth and started sucking on his left toe. Pretty cool. And then he took the toe out of his mouth and looked at Markandeya Rishi and inhaled. And as Krishna inhaled, the entire water of devastation and Markandeya Rishi went inside the body of this little baby. Water of devastation inside the body of a little baby. Krishna is unlimited, by the way. Although he appears to be something that's limited, he's unlimited. So inside the body of Krishna, he saw everything. And then Krishna exhaled, and everything went out again. There he is in the water of devastation again. And then the illusory energy was withdrawn, and there's Markandeya Rishi by the side of his hermitage. The illusory energy was displayed, and then the illusory energy withdrawn, because he expressed that to Narayana. Well, Markandeya Rishi's devotion became, although it was already pure, it just became completely